So then after that, we cut to the farm, I'm pretty sure.
Yes.
Where the engine is blown.
Yep, a big crack in the radiator.
I don't remember.
I think the radiator's got a crack the size of...
San Andreas.
Yep. You not knowing it makes sense.
I'm not a car guy. Yeah, so then...
I think it just says block, actually.
I think you're right.
Still same thought process, if I'm not mistaken.
I wouldn't know.
Not entirely the same, but close enough. I'm fine with saying radiator.
Sounds good.
Block's definitely the right word, but yeah.
So anyway, he's just like, yeah, it's shot. Like, he shoots it with his finger gun. And she's like, oh, great. So then I'm going to have to walk 4 miles to the nearest neighbor to make a phone call. He's like, well, Charles fired you.
Well, you just saved yourself an 8 mile round tripper.
That's what he starts with, I think.
Yep, you were fired.
I just saved myself? What did you do? Take classes in insensitivity?
Hey, I was trying to break it to you easy.
Well, you failed!
Hey, Bradzilla, you wouldn't even be standing here if it weren't for me.
What do you want, to thank you?
No, I should be thanking you for that privilege, shouldn't I?
And I don't remember what they say, but at the end...
Thank you. No, yeah, thank you. Yeah, slam door.
Which is, Donnie points out, just like Moonlighting, the show with Bruce Willis and...
Which I did not have a clue what that was watching the movie as a kid.
Me neither, at least the first few times. But then I got to watch the show Moonlighting with Mom. And...
Yep, so did I. And then I understood it.
Yep.
But again, it's another one of those pop culture references that brings their world into ours.
Yes.
And I love it for that.
Oh, for sure.
So remember that challenge, people.
Remember the challenge. So then April, I think, this is where she goes into her... journal entry sort of thing. She just draws pictures and narrates, but in the comic she actually writes a journal where she kind of goes over what's going on with the turtles and how they're handling it, although she completely omits Mikey, which is probably right because he's the dumbest turtle. I'm just kidding. He's not dumb. I'm just being jerked. No.
you didn't call him dumb. You called him the dumbest turtle.
Well, he's probably the dumbest turtle.
And I agree with that one. I really do. He is... But how does it go in that Nickelodeon cartoon where it's like Splinter's talking to Donnie?
Oh, I love that moment.
And he's talking about how he's got to learn to be in the space between his thoughts.
Yes.
And Donnie's like, to be fair, Mikey's got a lot more space between his thoughts than I do.
But like Splinter even says something that's like, Mikey's a different thing. Just
like Mikey's got his own problems.
Exactly.
It's a well-done cartoon. I like it a lot.
It's so good. Splinter's really great in that show.
Yes.
Anyway, so this is very similar to their whole thing in the comics, except, you know, Splinter's gone at this point instead of being with them. And Raph's the one unconscious, and he's not up right away. And so we see that Leo is having a leadership moment where he's keeping an eye and trying to still take care of Raph while he's unconscious. We get Donnie taking over Raph's role of working on the truck with Casey, which the dialogue is almost exactly the same. They don't go in alphabetical order in the comic with their insults, but they still use some of the same ones, like Gackface.
So if I were going to go with a Donnie does machine moment, this would be it. But I'd like to point out he doesn't actually work on the engine in this.
Yes.
I still think it counts because he's working with somebody to do it.
Yes, I agree.
But it's just very interesting that we've got Mikey being the goofball that he is. We've got Leonardo being the leader that he is. We've got Raphael raging like he does. The only thing we're missing is Donnie doing the machine stuff that he does.
Yeah.
He's still showing his intelligence in many things.
Yes,
like
he is.
The structurally speaking, the timing of things.
Or just his reflective nature, too. Like, he's trying to think, well, did you think about what Splinter said about not having him and things like that?
Right. Yeah, you still get the core of what that comes from with Donnie, which I think is great. So
yeah, I do really connect well with the Donnie of this film. Because I'm not necessarily super well-versed in car repairs or technological repairs or any of that stuff. But the thinking things through.
The analytical side.
The analytical side, yes. And combine that with his humor as well.
Yeah, but you're not funny. Well, looks aren't everything.
Thank you.
So, sorry. I forgot to finish.
But yeah, so then they have that. We don't get to hear what Mikey's up to. We get to hear about Casey separately as well. And is that the scene where he does the whole princess toots?
Yeah, the turtles are off doing their thing, and she comes out looking for Donnie, which is a Donnie does machine.
That's true. She was looking for Donnie to repair something.
Which he wasn't doing it though, so it doesn't really count. But it does. But
because
it doesn't.
You know, but that means he had been. He must have been working on things at the farmhouse, just like in the comic.
I didn't even pick that up until just now.
Right, me neither.
That's so great. Okay, so it shows how much he is the guy who does fix things.
Yes,
which is fantastic. Which just gives me more of an okay feeling, giving him the Donnie Does Machines while working with Casey, even
Absolutely.
Though you don't see him turning a wrench at all.
Yep.
But yes, then Casey is like saying, "All right, I'm your man. I'm Mr. Fix It, Toots or Babe."
Yeah,
or
he starts
sweet
with
cakes.
Toots and yeah.
Ah, princess.
I'm drowning here.
I'm drowning here.
I think it's coming along nicely, and then the bench breaks.
Wasn't that a mistake? I don't think the bench was supposed to break.
I don't know.
I'd have to double check, and I think this is something I got years ago, so I didn't look it up for this one, but if I remember correctly, the bench breaking was actually a blooper.
That's awesome.
Isn't it just?
I love it. I love it when bloopers work out.
Because that one, the timing was perfect and everything.
Another thing I noticed during this scene, this is going to be a weird thing to have noticed, so just bear with me. But when he gets up off the bench to go help, I noticed something about his pants, and they were laying funny. And I realized this whole time he's wearing athletic gear.
Under his pants?
Yeah. He's still wearing protection there.
I did not notice.
I just noticed it this last time I watched it. I'm like, wait a second.
Interesting.
I think he's still geared up for protecting at least that part of himself.
Can't say I blame him.
I don't blame him either, but still. Especially with April swinging that hammer around and being annoyed with him.
Mm. You know, if you wear a cup often enough, you start to forget that it's there.
I wouldn't know.
I do. I've definitely worn it for a few different things.
Okay.
And yeah, you get to a certain point where at first it is annoying.
Sure.
It's irritating. You walk.
I have worn one.
You walk a little different because of it. Whatever. But after a while, you forget that it's there.
Interesting.
Like, not the first time or even the first few weeks that you're wearing it. But
yeah.
If you've been doing it for months, yeah, you could put it on as a pair of underwear and not even realize that it's a jock strap instead.
I could see that.
So,
but yeah, I just thought it was interesting part of his character since he's always up with the whole sport theme thing.
Yep, absolutely.
Does Raph wake up here?
I believe so, yes.
So then we have Raph finally waking up and Leo's just like all over him. He's like, cool it, man. I'm all right. I know. It's okay.
Yeah, but I understand where Leo's coming
from.
Oh,
absolutely.
At the same time, if that were you lying there and I was in Leo's position, I'd been like, oh, man, he woke up. That's not true.
Yeah, no, I know what it's like to have somebody who's been hurt or in danger. I mean, as we've talked about before with my kid and his accident and stuff.
Right.
It's just, yeah, when you know that they're going to be okay, it's quite a relief. And yeah.
Yep. Even more so, I'm sure, when you've just said something that you might regret saying once you've cooled off.
Oh, sure.
Like,
yeah.
Like, if Raph hadn't been hurt, I'm sure Leo would have still apologized for everything.
Yeah.
He just didn't have that chance because Raph was hurt.
Yeah.
Even more so if you're the one responsible for it, I would imagine.
Definitely.
So.
Then, yeah, then so they're able to go to training, and we get to see a scene of somebody. It's hard to tell in the dark with the color masks, but somebody's in the barn beating up on a punching bag like in the comic book. It's after Raph wakes up, so it could be him, but I like that it's Mikey in my head, because that's what it is in the comic.
Yeah, I think I'm going to attribute that one to Slash.
Of course you will. But then in the comic, Raph is also like pulling sentry duty on top of the barn, and so we actually get a little moment of that referenced as well, where he's on there saying, Splinter!
Yep.
It doesn't seem like he's necessarily just doing it to keep guard, he's just up high somewhere to agonize.
Yeah.
Is that a rage moment?
I'm questioning that. Because he's processing, and therefore he would likely be processing the rage that he has. So I would say yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd go with yes. What do you think?
I had written it down as a rage moment, because I felt it was, because I felt there was still rage there that he's still missing and all that, but...
Yeah, okay. Yeah. We'll definitely count it as a rage moment.
And is that where we cut back to Splinter again?
Ooh, I don't recall.
No, that's much later.
No, yeah,
that's
much later.
The scene I'm thinking of is much
so
later.
So what I'm thinking of is the scene that I think we do get close to, which is Leo meditating, where he communicates with Splinter, sort of.
Actually,
that's the one I was thinking of.
Actually, I think what happens here is I think we do see Splinter, and then we see Shredder and Tatsu talking about how they haven't been seen in a long time.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
I think that's what we get interjected right here.
I do not understand, Master. Why do the trouble still turn to you?
So he talks about something from the past and all that stuff. And
something familiar, something from the past.
And then we go back, And then they're doing their exercises and trainings, montage stuff.
Yeah, which is cool.
It's awesome to see them back in full form.
Got that 80s music thing going again. Early 90s, technically, but...
Yes, and it's good. Yeah, then we do see Leo doing some meditation and getting in contact with Splinter.
Yep.
So then he goes and tells his brothers. And he's like, Splinter's alive. Yeah, we all think he's alive.
Again, we're seeing in that moment, though, Donnie's intelligence.
Yes.
What Russian novel set in... Whatever, Napoleon, but I don't remember the whole question, yep. But War and Peace, yep. He doesn't even think about it, he knows it, he's got it, he's moving on.
And then Leo totally, ruins the game.
Yep.
But Leo makes a huge mistake at this moment.
By ruining their game?
Nope. They're like, of course, Leo, we all think he's alive. What does Leo say?
I don't think.
Right there! You know the brothers would pounce on that! They're brothers!
Yes and no. I mean, he's in a manic state. They want to make sure that he's sane before they start picking on him. And he does follow up quickly after, I don't think. I know.
Oh, I know what he says. But it's just funny that he starts it off with, I don't think.
But you're absolutely right. The brothers, if he was in a more normal state, would have totally pounced on him saying he doesn't think.
And so he has a leadership moment where he brings them all out to meditate with him. And we get... Splinter appearing as a force ghost.
Yeah, I like Donnie's attitude, though, bringing marshmallows. I'm kind of with him on that thought.
Leo was not pleased. Put those away. Oh, okay. And we get more Sensei Splinter, because he gives him more stuff. And it actually almost sounds like, because he says his final words. Like, I'm like, are they going to kill this guy off?
Right, if you don't know the movie, you don't know. And it wouldn't be the first time Splinter's died in media.
Correct. Not the first time at all.
Or is it? I'm trying to think of the timelines on when the comics...
Oh, sure. So, okay, it's not the only time, I guess is more accurate.
Yes. So, sorry. It could be the first time if that's the case.
So after they get that, we cut to Casey and April having a conversation.
Yep, where Casey's...
On the fixed bench.
Yep. Casey's talking about how he hurt his knee playing hockey professionally.
Yeah, so he played less than a year.
Yep.
Yeah.
Which is... canon to the comics, I believe, as well, that he played hockey and had to stop because of an injury.
I don't remember if that's true or not. It could be.
I'm pretty sure it is. I hate it when you do that. Leo leads.
Yeah, Leo leads and says, it's time to go back.
And then we get some more great music.
And we get the awesome music, and it's raining when they pull in. And
I like the rain there. I mean,
It's a good
It
moment.
It adds this element that, again, just makes everything real feeling.
Right, because it's not... the same environment every day, which it shouldn't be because it's a different day.
Right. And just because it's not usually raining doesn't mean throwing in rain is the wrong thing. And I love the way Casey plays with it.
Yes.
Standing under the, what's wrong? This is great. You know, as he's got the gutter pouring more rain on him.
Yep. But he also thinks part of that too is like, oh, this place is great. I love this.
Yep. And then you coming, guys? I think Leo calls that out.
I mean, he might.
Is that a leader moment?
If he's the one who called it, probably.
I feel like it is. So, yeah, Leo leads them down into the sewer, and Casey is not happy about that.
No, there's some funny stuff there.
Yeah, he's never even looked at another guy before.
That joke wouldn't make it today.
No, it would not.
I was rewatching it this morning, right? And my wife came in around this scene, and she thought the line about, why don't I end up making friends with people with condos, she thought that was a funny line, because Casey said that or something.
Yep.
And then you're claustrophobic, which is a big word that Donnie knew, showing his intelligence again.
Yep.
Not that other people don't know the word, but...
Sure.
They gave it to him for a reason.
Yes.
And then, Casey getting it wrong of what it means. But what was funny about that, and she commented on it, because I never really thought that much about it. It's just a weird word, so of course he just assumes he's saying something more derogatory.
Yes.
And... But what was funny is that it doesn't even sound close to the right word. What it sounds like is homophobic.
Sure.
But it does not sound like homosexual at all. Claustrophobic.
Right.
And so she comments on that. She's like that's just kind of out of nowhere, isn't it? I'm like, I mean, yeah, it is. And it made me think, because I'm like, well, you wouldn't get away with this discussion and this line in a movie today.
You could. But you'd have a lot of people hating it, which would actually probably make the movie do better because of it.
That's true. But people don't usually do that.
No.
But when I was rethinking it, I'm like, they might have actually still included the the setup for the joke and taken it a different direction. Because claustrophobic does sound a lot like homophobic. And he would say something to the effect of, like, I'm not, you know, bigoted or something along those lines. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I get it.
Still misinterpreting it.
Totally, because that's what makes it funny.
Right. So then he decides he's going to sleep in the truck, which he then later on, there's another scene in between, but when he's in there, he's like, afraid of closed spaces, and he, after a bit, he's like, roll down the window.
Now, here's the thing that's clearly one of those claustrophobic things he was doing there. I get that, but at the same time, I've slept in a truck plenty of times, and having the window cracked is a great thing. It keeps fresh air. It keeps
the absolutely.
Windows from fogging. You kind of want to do it regardless.
I agree.
But what he was doing was not for that reasoning.
Right.
Which makes it funny.
But then down there, they find that Danny's hiding out in their lair.
Yep.
And he mentions pizza.
He does. I just like how he's like, don't shoot. And it's like, I don't think it's loaded, kid.
Oh, yeah, that's a good line.
And it just, it's kind of random, but it again, embodies who the turtles are. Because Raph's the one who says that.
Yes.
And, like, all four of the turtles goof and joke, especially when it comes to fighting. Because, again, as we said earlier, they're fulfilling their purpose for what they are designed for.
Absolutely. And then, then he's like, oh, yeah, I think I had some leftover pizza from the other night. And so we got a pizza counter there. And then when the turtles show up, I think it's Donnie that's sitting next to it.
Yep.
And then he's like, he peeks at it and then closes it and turns away. And then Mikey shows up. He's like, well? Question.
Yeah?
Like penicillin on your pizza? Another pizza counter.
No!
And then they have a funeral for it. Bunch of goofballs.
Yeah, that's why I love them so much.
I do enjoy the Donnie-Mikey relationship throughout the movie.
I do too.
Their interactions are great.
It's what makes the brothers feel like brothers. Like,
oh, yeah.
Their goofiness also is what brings Leo and Raph into that brother mindset in the movie.
Yeah. And then Danny sees the pictures that April made and thinks they're great, so he takes the Leo picture. And then later on, when they're all sleeping, he sneaks out, and Casey notices.
Yep.
So he follows to the hideout.
Yeah, the foot hideout. The picture thing, where he steals a picture, or takes a picture, is gifted a picture.
Whatever. I wouldn't use the word take a picture, because it sounds like he's actually taking a photograph with a camera.
Right. Anyway, where he gets the drawing from April. You look at the drawings that she's made, and it's very much one of those movie moments where the drawings are scenes that she would not have seen.
I get what you're saying. I don't know if that's completely true, because she does come into the room where he's sitting on the stool when she's talking about it, so she's seen him there, so she's drawing from memory, because we see where she draws it.
Yep.
She probably saw Casey and Donnie working on the truck at some point. She probably left before they got into the conversation that we saw.
Sure.
Those are the only two drawings I can think of.
Those are the only two drawings I remember as well that we see.
So I don't have a too big of an issue. I get what you're saying, and it happens a lot, but this one, like, you can definitely draw a line to it.
You can connect it. I still feel like it is not... I feel like they're using movie magic there.
Sure.
Where it doesn't connect the way that it should.
I understand what you're saying.
Okay.
But we just don't know what kind of artist she really was, I guess.
All right, fine. We'll go with that. So anyway, Danny goes out and Casey's chasing him to the hideout. They're at the hideout. We'll go there.
All right. And yeah, so Casey's trying to skulk around and we see Danny get to Splinter. And that's where they have a conversation again. And that's where we get the rest of the backstory about Orokusaki Hamato Yoshi. And why Hamato Yoshi was killed, and how Splinter scratched Orokusaki.
Yep, and we hear about Orokonagi as well.
We do not.
What?
Orokunagi does not exist in this version.
True. And in the comics, he never scratched anybody's face as a rat.
True.
So, actually, I think the original is the only one that we don't have a deformed Shredder when the turtles meet him.
That's probably true, actually. I think you're right.
I mean, I don't know. I'm trying to remember the cartoon. I don't know if he's deformed or not, the original cartoon.
Oh, 87 cartoon? No, he's not deformed.
Okay, so that's twice then that he's not deformed. After that, I think every time he's deformed that we meet him.
Yeah, I think you're right. He gets extra deformed in the second movie.
Yes.
Twice.
Well, I think he gets deformed later in the comics as well. It just wasn't when we meet him initially.
You get deformed versions of Shredder because they were like the attempted resurrections.
Yes.
But I think he looks... He might be a little... I can't remember now. He might be a little beat up looking. I don't remember for sure. Doesn't matter.
Either way.
So, but yeah, in the comics we had the whole plot with Oroku Nagi being the one that was after Teng Shen and tried to rape her or whatever, and so Hamada Yoshi kills him, and so then Oroku Saki wants revenge on Hamada Yoshi for killing his brother and hunts him down in America.
Yep.
Whereas here, Oroku Saki takes over the Oroku Nagi time, like the thing, and he just runs off with Teng Shen.
Yep. And Oroku Saki kills him just out of jealousy, righting or wrong that he felt was perpetuated.
Correct. Yeah. And that's a big divergence for the whole plot of the movie, because in the comics it's all about honor and revenge all over the place. He's honoring his brother that's why he goes after Hamada Yoshi. Splinter's honoring Hamada Yoshi because of the Oroku brothers.
Yep.
Right? And so they have to kill. And it's not just like they claim honor, but it's also revenge.
Yeah, it's a very Bushido type thing though.
It is. But it maybe I would say probably not the best way to do things.
Well, of course it's not. I mean, do I really need a Bible reference here? Because, I mean, I can't. I can go all over this one. Turn the other cheek and all that stuff. Right. But, yeah,
but the movie, not the best way. But the movie version is interesting because that's not what they're doing. And, in fact, Splinter even tries to tell him not to have revenge and all this stuff. Well, I don't think he uses the revenge when he talks to Raph earlier, but he does talk about revenge later, I think. I thought he's used the word somewhere, but I could be wrong. But even still, not letting anger control you.
Yes.
Is the bigger thing, right?
Yeah, I don't remember him using the word revenge.
I might be wrong. So, Danny gets to learn the history, and then Shredder shows up, and...
Well, important part there. In the history, Danny's like, whatever happened to this Oroku Saki guy?
Right.
And Splinter's saying, I don't know, but you wear his symbol upon your brow. So that headband that he was wearing...
The Dragon Doji.
Yep. And so Danny drops that onto the ground...
And that's exactly when Shredder shows up.
And Shredder notices it on the ground.
Yes, he does.
So.
And then he's like, where were you? And you're hiding something. And then he pulls the picture out of the pocket.
Yep.
So then he knows that they're back. So he sends all his foot to go kill them.
Now, if this was the same Shredder from the comic books, I dare say he would have killed Danny at this point.
I think so. I actually thought about that this morning, too. I'm like, why didn't he just strike him down? I mean, besides the fact that it's a family-friendly-ish movie, right? But I'm like, he probably thinks of him as pretty insignificant. Like, he doesn't even need to touch this kid. Like, what is he going to do?
At this point, yeah, that's got to be what he's thinking. Because if he didn't hit him or anything.
He's focused on killing the turtles. He's like, I'm going this time, personally.
Didn't arrest him. Like, not arrest in the sense.
But chain him up
or
whatever.
Yeah. Didn't capture him. Didn't hurt him. Didn't anything.
Because he's nothing.
Yeah.
To Shredder.
Right. Kind of shows the caste system a little bit in his mindset.
And, you know, the love of a father. Or lack thereof.
Yeah.
I
think it just proves the fact that Shredder is not a father.
Oh, absolutely.
So.
And then, but he also tells Tatsu to kill Splinter while he's gone.
He does.
So, and Danny hears this, so he knows that they're going to try to kill Splinter. So when he runs into Casey later, and I think there's some intersplicing of scenes here, but for this through line, when he runs into Casey, he's like, hey, they're going to kill Splinter. Which, of course, Casey's like, who?
Well, I love Casey's reaction when he sees Splinter.
I do, too.
He takes a beat and is like, wait, is that a rat?
But then he does the whole, like, okay.
I've been hanging out with mutant turtles, whatever.
Yeah. He just kind of shrugs it off. He's like, what do I expect?
And then goes right into doing what he has to do.
Yeah. But then, yeah, so we get to the foot sliding. They're opening up manholes everywhere, getting down in the sewers. They're sliding through the little grates of the what is that?
Curb? Drainage system?
Yeah, the drain of the curbs or whatever, yeah. The sliding down through there and all kinds of stuff. I would not be able to fit through there.
I've got a bit of a belly myself at this point, so I'm with you.
But then they show up in the lair, but then there's just a bunch of smoke and they... do ninja fighting again.
Yeah,
we don't see anything.
Reminiscent of the first scene of the movie with the fight.
Yep.
Well, second scene, I guess.
And when it clears, apparently during the fight, Raph was eating an apple. Which makes it seem like it was such a casual battle for him. And he looks at it, he's like, I do wish that, or I hope there's more of them. And there's, I think one of the first times I watched it, I thought he meant the apples.
Same.
Because it was gone.
Yep.
But no, that's not what he might. Because then the ninjas show up and he's like, ah, good. I love that.
And if I'm not mistaken, that's where he actually pulls out his Psi. They were still in his belt for that first fight.
Yep. He didn't need it while they're fighting in the smoke.
Nah, he knew what he was doing.
And then, and while they're fighting down there, there's a point where Mikey's like putting a guy into perfect position and April's hiding up with Donnie's bow staff and just knocks the guy in the head right when he's in the perfect position.
A little bit to the left and one more time.
But when he falls, it's onto a pile of foot ninjas. Yes. So Mikey's been doing this constantly.
I feel like this is a Mike musing moment.
Sure.
Because he's not only talking about positioning him as he's positioning him, he lets her do what she does. He's got that pile and he's like, you're doing great, sis, or something like
something
that.
Something like that, yeah.
Just overall, it seems like that joke that he's created this pile of foot soldiers underneath her.
Yeah. And then later in the sewer part of it, when they get out of the lair, Raph's like knocking somebody out in front of the door. And is it Donnie that skateboards and does the surfing through the sewer to hit people?
Yeah, so he's got this bow staff again at this point, but he jumps off the door as it's knocked down.
Oh, yeah.
Gangway! And then he starts going down the tunnel, hitting people and stuff with his staff and knocking them down. And yeah, Raph pops out at that point. Show off!
Yep. And then, like, I think we probably go back to rescuing Splinter somewhere in there at that point. And they're trying to get through the place, and then they meet up with Tatsu and all the thugs.
Again, Casey's just one of the turtles.
Oh, yeah.
He's joking around. Him and April both have that mouth on them that's just kind of joking and fun, but also like, you're trying to intimidate me, and yeah, you might hurt me, but I'm not scared.
Yep. So Tatsu beats up Casey a bit, but then Casey lands into a pile with some golf clubs.
Absolutely. But back to what I was saying about Casey and April not being scared, I mean, that's kind of how we're supposed to approach the world, right? The Bible tells us,
yep,
specifically, do not be afraid of those who can destroy your body, but be afraid of him who can destroy both your body and soul in the fires of hell.
Yes.
And I love that they are walking through all this with that attitude. I'm going to do what's right, regardless of what happens.
For sure.
And I'm going to have some fun while I do it.
Oh, and then with April knocking the guys out, that was definitely like a super sidekick moment.
Oh, yeah, super sidekick moment right there, for sure.
We'll have another one coming up at the end here.
Yes, although I think Casey grabbing a golf club is almost kind of a super sidekick
moment. He's the hero in this scene.
He's the hero in the scene, but he's not the hero of the movie.
Doesn't matter.
Fair enough.
Because you could argue Raph's the hero of the movie, and the Turtles would be sidekicks at that point.
Yeah, except the movie's called the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, not the Teenage Mutant Ninja Raph.
So, yeah, he yells four and knocks Tatsu up and over, and I would think the golf club would probably be bent after that, but that's okay. And,
it's another cartoony moment they have in this.
It is. And Sam Rockwell's thug guy, he's all like, well, let's get him, and he's like pulling on somebody else to, like, go.
Yeah, he's got both hands on two other guys trying to throw him forward.
And then there's a whole conversation about family, and Casey's like, you call this family? That over there family?
Yeah.
And then Splinter has a Sensei Splinter moment where he explains that Shredder was just using them.
Poisoning their minds for which he desires.
Exactly.
Which is kind of what we were saying at the beginning. It was a selfish thing that he was creating this quote-unquote family.
Completely.
And it was recognized by Splinter for sure, because he's wise.
Yep.
Which I love Splinter for.
Absolutely.
But it was clearly recognized by Casey as well, who's not nearly as wise as Splinter ever. He will never be as wise as Splinter is.
No.
It's just not going to happen.
Nope.
However, he's got enough wisdom to say that, yeah, this is stupid.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's no family here. This is garbage.
Yep.
Literally garbage. Piles of it.
I think after that we see all the foot ninja jumping out of the manholes and out of the curb drains. And
yeah, they don't want to be in the sewers no more. I can't figure out why.
They're running scared. And so the turtles are up in the streets fighting, and then there's a conversation between Mikey and Donnie while they're both battling different people. And Mikey is trying too hard a couple times because Donnie calls him out, says, too derivative. And I forget what the other
too
one
cliche.
Was.
Too cliche.
Too cliche.
Well, it was a shell of a good hit.
Yep.
I like it. Step up.
And they eventually climb up a fire escape battling some people and finish some people up on the roof.
Is Mikey get amusing for the axe that went over his head?
I don't think so. Okay. I don't consider that amusing.
I didn't feel like it was, but I had to check.
Yeah.
Because it is still kind of a standout moment, especially when I'm trying to make God references throughout the whole thing. And
this is the one time they actually literally call out the name?
Right. And I wouldn't even say it's necessarily in a derogatory way, right? You know how you can say, like, oh, God, you know, and how people use it in that negative way.
Yes.
But he's saying it in a rejoicing kind of way. I mean, he almost gets his head taken off by an axe, ducks it into his shell, which is fun that they included that in the movie. And I'm impressed again with their art, their creation of the suits and all that.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
That's just amazing. But then he shouts out, God, I love being a turtle. And
so he's thanking God for what he made him to be and how he created him.
He really is, even if he doesn't know he's doing it in the moment. That is exactly what's happening there.
Yep.
Easy moment for me to tie into God right there.
For sure.
Couldn't pass it up.
Understandable. And then they're on the roof, and they finish off the ninja there, and then we get a show-off Shredder moment when he lands in a very supervillain way. Because, you know, superheroes, they usually, like, end up on a knee or with a leg splayed out or whatever, but he just stands tall when he lands on his feet. He doesn't even need a buckle or roll or anything because he's the villain.
Right, yeah. Heroes are posers, much like we get in the Black Widow movie.
Yes. Oh, I love that. I love that conversation.
You're such a poser.
Or when she, like, does her own super little landing and then, like, freaks out about it.
Yep.
Like, ew. Good stuff.
Indeed.
And so, yeah, now they have to beat up this guy, and we get a couple of jokes about him being a can opener, or maybe all that hardware is used for making coleslaw. So a couple more Mikey musings.
Yep, Michael musings.
Yeah, whatever. I'm
calling him an archangel now.
Well, he is Michelangelo, so. Yeah. And they decide to go one-on-one, so Raph goes first. He's like, I got it. He doesn't.
Are you sure? I could have swore that's how it ended. He's just like, I got it. Walks over, takes out Shredder, end of the movie, credits roll.
Then Leo goes, and then Donnie and Mikey play for it, rock, paper, scissors. And Donnie's actually upset that he lost, which means that he doesn't get to go, so.
Yeah, kind of weird. Yep. The whole thing was goofy and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
But in the middle of the fight, I feel like we get another Shredder show-off.
Oh, really? Oh, yes. That's after they all go one-on-one, though.
Yeah, after they go one-on-one, yep. Because the turtles are all huddling, and it's like, at what point did we start losing control? This is the only time they're out of breath over this whole fight.
Yes.
You even think about the fight in the antique store, and they're not out of breath in this way.
True.
Fighting Shredder is taking a lot out of them.
It is.
But they are huddled, and they're talking about that, and, well, maybe somebody should tell them we're the good guys. Yes. But Shredder's just kind of standing there pacing a little bit, waiting for them, and I feel that feels very show-off, like a show-off to me. Like, I could take you out while your backs are turned and you're huddling, but...
Yep.
And he's not got any honor. We know that. So he didn't have any issues doing it.
Nope.
He's just showing them that you got nothing on me. I'm in control.
Yep. And then, so then they're all trying to go back and fight. Oh, way back when Raph was fighting the foot, they toss his Psy over the roof. So that was another lost weapon I forgot about.
Whoa, yep. I know why you're going there because of what's about to happen, but good call. But I thought you were going to go with the sidekick moment before that. Ooh, leftovers.
Was that that point? Well, there's a lot. I don't remember exactly how everything plays out.
All right, well, let's finish the Shredder.
So there's a point here where they're all fighting, and Casey and the Purple Dragons and Splinter and everybody are up above, finally, or not above, but they make it to the streets. And Casey's like, oh, your boys might need some help there, but Splinter's gone.
Yep.
And then, somewhere in there, Casey does say, ooh, leftovers, and he takes a garbage truck and knocks a bunch of foot guys off the fire escape.
Yep.
By backing into it. So a super sidekick moment there for sure.
Yep.
But then during the battle, Leo goes in again and he gets knocked down and his swords go flying at one point. So he loses them there. And then when Shredder gets a spear to his neck, he tells the others to throw their weapons. So they all throw their weapons. So we got three more lost weapons.
Yep. And I think this is the point where the Shredder is no longer showing off in the same way, because when he gets Leonardo down on the ground with the spear to his neck, at this point, Shredder has had a cut on his arm.
This is true.
And I think that makes Shredder panic slightly, and why he's no longer
They were able to draw blood.
That overconfident, I don't need to worry anymore. They drew blood. Somewhere there was a mistake. I'm not going to play that anymore.
Yeah. And so, And then Splinter laughs at them for throwing their weapons because he's like, psh, you could have just lost one and you might have still been able to beat me with the three of you. But now you're all going to die.
You called him Splinter.
Shredder, I meant.
But at the same time, you know, telling them that is very much a Sensei Splinter moment.
Right.
Sensei Shredder? No, I don't like that.
No. But I think the reason I slipped is because I was about to say, and then Splinter shows up.
Yep, right before absolutely. He could kill him,
right at the edge of the fire escape. And because when they threw their weapons, Mikey's nunchuck landed just on top, so it didn't go down to the bottom.
Correct.
And so Splinter, not Shredder, Splinter has the nunchucks.
At least one of them.
Yes. And Shredder reveals who he is, because Splinter calls him out on his name, Orokosaki.
I know who you are, Orokosaki.
Yeah, and so we see the scratch, and he's like, so then Shredder's like, oh, I'm going to finish off what I started with your ear. Because he had chopped his ear way back in the backstory.
Yep.
And he charges, and Splinter dodges. No be there.
I was going to say that. Mr. Miyagi moment.
Yes.
Sensei Splinter.
But Splinter did have a Sensei Splinter in this moment, too.
He when does.
He's explaining things to Shredder. He's trying to Sensei this guy.
Well, yeah, because, it shows that Splinter's not the same from the comic book. He's not about revenge and honor right. In that same sense. He is actually looking out for the good of those. He is showing true love in that sense. I want what is best for you. Because as Shredder's hanging there, Splinter's trying to tell him that death's coming for us all. When you die, something much worse is in store for you. Now, that's not saying, hey, it's going to all suck for you. It's saying, I'm letting you know what's coming so that you have a chance to change. I really think that's what he's doing there. Because if he just wanted to kill him, he would have just dropped him.
Oh, for sure.
That would have been done. But he's trying to teach him. He's trying to instruct him and help him out there.
Yeah.
Much like we're supposed to do as Christians.
Oh, and they make sure Splinter never even is the one to kill him, right? Like, what happens is he's hanging there. He's fine as long as he's holding on. And doesn't try to hurt Splinter. But his own anger and revenge causes him to still try to kill the person who's holding him aloft. Knowing what's in consequence for that. And because he takes the knife out from his back, like he has sheathed in the back, and chucks it.
Yep.
Splinter just catches it, which means he has to let go.
And down goes Shredder.
For when you die, it will be without honor.
So in that, I mean, isn't that how we see so many people who don't believe in God treat God? It's like he's the one giving them air to breathe. He's the one helping them out. He's the one giving them everything they need. And they're very angry at him or rejecting him entirely and being like, I'm going to do it my own way. Mm-hmm. And then they fall into the back of a garbage truck and get crushed by it.
Yeah, that happens all the time. Is that another super sidekick moment where he does the final blow, Casey?
I feel like it should be counted.
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, I mean, I like it because he's not.
Oops.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm excited to get to that movie.
Oh, for sure. This one's better, but the second one is hilarious.
The second one's a lot of fun. This one is a better movie.
Yeah.
And a better turtle story.
Yes. Then, you know, there's some celebration. We have the cops show up, and Sam Rockwell explains where they might find more information, which is an actual reference to the creators of the Turtles, because he says it's like on Laird Island or something. He says something about East and Laird. I don't remember, but both names are being used. And Charles shows up and is like excited to see Dan. It's Dan now. But then he also gives April her job back, but with a lot more.
Yep, you're a tough negotiator, Charles.
Yes, he nods very exuberantly. And Casey's like, hey, I just, like, what's up with us? I look like I just called.
Hold up. Oh. You forgot Danny giving back what he stole from April.
Right.
Which is a small moment. You may not have catched it the first time you've ever watched the movie.
Sure.
I know I certainly didn't, but I was also a kid, so whatever. But this is more reference to Danny's change of character. Like, at the beginning of the movie, we get this one very set, just nobody loves me, I'm a loner, I'm gonna be part of this group, which is a group of loners.
Well, and I take whatever I can get, whenever I want, because I'm just satisfying myself, which was what the whole thing was with that gang.
Correct. And then, now, he's not only helped out Splinter,
mm-hmm.
and helped out just that mentality, but now he's going that step further, that really solidifies his character by giving back what he took.
Because nobody knew. Nobody would have ever known.
No.
Except for him.
April didn't even have a clue. What's this? Something I owe you. Trust me.
Yep.
That's all he said. He didn't go into it. It's just $20 he handed her, and that was that.
It's actually a pretty pivotal moment for him.
It's so huge. It also shows what Jesus does in our lives, which is why I didn't want to miss it.
Sure. No, absolutely. I appreciate you catching it.
But yeah, that's it's huge. It still is a huge moment for the character himself, which is partly why I really wish Danny was included in other universes for the Turtles.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, he's just a great guy. I like him.
Yeah, I'm with you. So yeah, then Casey's like, well, I look like I just called Mike Tyson a sissy.
Well, you don't need an ambulance, do you?
Well, no. Just shut up and kiss me. So they make out, and so the Turtles all cheered on. All
right, April.
And then they have some more slinging.
Yep.
A lot of it. And Donnie's really trying hard to come up with something, but he keeps failing, and they keep just rubbing it in.
All of them are rubbing it in, even Raph. Yep. I mean, he's not really the slinger in the same way, but, you know, he's, like, rubbing the back of his head and everything. It's just, oh.
That's another thing about those costumes. They sweat, like, they're sweat on the characters half the time, too.
Yes.
Which is just amazing. But then Splinter chimes in with, I've always liked Kawabunga. And then they all do a high three and say Kawabunga.
Yep.
Which is the classic Turtles phrase from the cartoons.
Which still comes from someplace very weird, being that it came from Casey originally in the Turtle comics.
I believe so. I think that came out before.
Either way, it's fun, and it's what we know of the Turtles, is
Kawabunga. And then, like, right after that, it starts playing your favorite song.
Yeah. Oops. I don't remember them playing Jesus Loves Me in this movie. No, it's not a bad song, and I do kind of sing along to it when I watch it, because I know it so well at this point.
Yeah.
But it just seems out of place. Because every time we got that kind of rap punk kind of music, it tied into what I'm calling the Purple Dragons, even though they weren't called that in the movie.
Yep.
And so to have it there at the end after the heroes won just feels wrong to me. That's why I feel like it was a poor choice. That being said, it's not a terrible song, especially for the age that it came out in, but I digress. So what is our total tally?
All right, so the tallies we got today, we got 6 lost weapons, I believe. I think we only have 2 moments of slinging, at the beginning and the end.
Mostly, yeah. Yeah.
We have 4 trying too hards, because we have Bossa Nova, Chevy Nova, Shell Shock, and ready to shell it out. Or we're really able to shell it out, or something like that.
Bossa Nova is a very weird one. Did you know that's actually a musical?
Yes.
Type? Oh, it's weird, right?
Yep.
And, I mean, Chevy Nova is no better.
Nope.
But why are you going with obscure references, Donnie? I know you know those things.
That's what he thinks about.
be like saying, Bach! Like, that's a weird exclamation, you know? I just don't get it.
Then we have, I think, 14 mentions of pizza throughout the movie.
Did she say pizza?
And we have, I believe, 7 Sensei Splinter moments.
It's a lot, actually.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a movie, so you expect more, but 7 is still a lot.
Yes. We have 3 brotherly brawls.
I'm forgetting one, I think.
Donnie Raph.
Yep.
Donnie and Raph Part 2. Leo Raph.
Donnie Raph Part 2 is what I was. That's the when he throws aside. Yeah. Yep, okay.
Decisive Discipline. The book thrown at Mikey.
Yep. There wasn't as much of that as I would expect.
Right. We definitely get a little bit more, at least 2 more references in Secret of the Ooze.
For the Discipline?
Yeah.
It happens more than twice.
I know that he does the flip at the beginning, near the beginning, and then there's the flips at the very end.
Yep.
When he also gives us our second funny.
There's a couple more in there.
I believe you. I just know for sure that there's those 2.
Remember, go ninja, go ninja, go!
We have 9 moments of Leo leads.
It's a lot.
We have 14 Mikey musings.
That is also a lot. I don't feel like either of these are abnormally large, though.
Sure.
For the length of the movie, anyway.
That makes sense. We have 7 noticed ninjas.
That is a lot.
Yep.
I mean, yeah, they fail a lot. I get that. But 7 times in that movie is a lot of them failing.
We have 5 Raph rages.
Which feels surprisingly small. Especially with him being the main.
And you're like, that's what he does. He's angry.
Right. He's cool, but rude.
We have 2 knockout passouts. April's knocked out. Raph is knocked out.
Yep. No fainting, though.
No. No fainting. We do get fainting in the second movie.
Yep, we do.
We have 3 show-off shredders, a shoulder reveal and the carpet, the supervillain landing, and the pacing while the turtles huddle.
Yep.
We have 3 improvised weapons, the water from the fish tank, the symbols, and the golf club. Donnie does machines, only the one, with working on the truck, although hints that he must have done more.
Yep. Which makes me feel a lot better about that count.
It really does.
Like, I was very disturbed until we came across that, and I feel so much better.
And then three super sidekick moments. April with the staff, and Casey with the garbage truck two different times.
And then, of course, as we don't keep track, plenty of Jesus moments if you're looking for him.
Plenty of moments of Jesus. He's everywhere if you're really looking.
Which I love. I really love that. Seek and you will find.
Absolutely.
Especially the ninjas. If you seek hard enough, you'll see that there's 20 in your room right now when you're listening to this. Oh. All right, so what's next?
I believe it's time for some card opening.
Oh, yeah. So, as usual, we're doing collectibles at the end of the episode with those kind of booster things. It's a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles card pack by Topps, something that I know Brandon and I did a lot when we were younger. They're supposed to be...
Oh, man, I remember the look of this card.
He didn't know I'd gotten... Well, he knew I got this. He just didn't know what it was that I got.
Right.
So there's gum in here, too, which is probably a terrible idea to chew, but I'm going to do it anyway.
It's all broken. At least in mine.
I'm sure mine is, too. All right, so what do you got for cards there? Oh, he's throwing the gum in his mouth. Never mind. Oh, I can hear it crunch. How's it taste?
Not good.
Oh, do you want mine?
No.
Oh, gross. Look at the back of this where the gum was sitting. Oh, all right, go ahead and say what you got there, bro. Oh.
I was not becoming chewy. I have now spit my gum out. It doesn't chew. No.
Oh, no. So bad. Oh, that was a bad choice. I'm glad I did it for your guys' amusement. Maybe a bit for mine, but ew.
Good thing I have a spit cup here.
Ugh.
Woo. That tastes old.
Well, it's at least 30 years old at this point.
So bad.
This is the second edition of the pack, so it's not even first edition, which is probably better for us. But, oh, never again.
All right, let's see what I got. I have... Oh, yeah, I forgot about that, too. All right, well, maybe let's just start on this side. Okay, so we got number 109, A Possible Solution. The Turtles and their new rabbit buddy, Usagi Yojimbo, follow the old man Obento back to his home. Obento says he has a way to control the dragon that is loose in the city, but our gang is not so sure. It's continued on card number 110, A Magic Candle. And yeah, so we have a picture of the cartoon turtles with Usagi Yojimbo. Then I got 137. Down goes Donatello. During the water battle, Donatello gets hit by one of the Shredder's harpoons. His tube deflates, and he soon finds himself spinning down into the river like a top. Continued on card 138, taking the plunge. 101, Rabbit Rampage. Let my rabbit brothers be free, yells Usagi as he rushes at the manager of the rabbit hutch. The manager, stunned at seeing a samurai bunny charging at him, tries to escape, but with two brief motions of his sword, Usagi slices the manager's suit right off him. Continued on card 102, Turtles to the Rescue. I'm liking that I'm getting some Usagi stuff. I actually really like the Usagi Yojimbo comics a lot, too. They're really good. Number 174, Pretty Please. Bebop and Rocksteady have gotten hold of the fly's mutazoo gun, which is fortunate since the Shredder was turned into a fly. Now, you mutants, he orders, turn me back to normal. We will see, says Bebop. Maybe if you ask us real nice. Continued on card 175, back home again. And then number 171, the missing piece. Don't worry, guys, says Donatello. Baxter's ship may have taken off, but it won't get very far without this. He holds up the missing bolt from the warp drive, the small, shiny object he'd found while paddling down the underground river. I don't think Baxter's going to Dimension X. In fact, I think he's going to make a small detour, he says with a wink. Continued on card 172, not quite ship shape. And the... I got a Raphael sticker. Looks like it says number 2. Not sure what that means, necessarily. It definitely has a line in it from where the gum used to be. discoloration. And on the back, I have most of Leo eating a pizza. That's supposed to be part of a bigger picture.
Yes, yeah. The back and, ones are supposed to be part
and
of
And I see Mikey's belt.
All right. So I've got number 119, Turtle Aerobics. As our tale unfolds, we find the turtles doing their own kind of workout as Donatello films them on his portable video camera. "Keep it up, guys," he says. "Once I get this all on film, we'll have our own exercise video and we can make millions." Continued on 120, no pain, no fame. Then I've got number 161, Insect Aside. As the turtles battle the evil fly, he takes his muter ray and throws it down a long, clear tube. "So long, turtles," yells the fly. "In a matter of minutes, I'll be blasting off to Dimension X." Under his breath, he adds, "I can easily reprogram this computer. You'll never outsmart me." The turtles, meanwhile, whip off their suits and head off after the gun. Continued on 162, down the tube. 89. Our story opens. We find our four heroes in Donatello's workroom. "I've sort of been fooling around with a new pan-dimensional portal," says Donatello. "That way we'll be able to travel to other dimensions, and we'll save money on travel expenses." Continued on 90, pulling the switch. Number 112, Defeating the Dragon. The rabbit warrior Usagi Yojimbo prepares to face the giant dragon. He rears back and hurls the blue flame the magic candle Obento has given him. Amazingly, the candle lands right in the dragon's mouth, as Obento instructed. "What an arm," says Raphael. "We should sign him up for our baseball team." Continued on 113, Usagi triumphs.
Which one was that, 112?
112.
Interesting.
And then I've got 163, Chefs of the Future. After sliding down the tube, the turtles find themselves in what looks like a kitchen. "Hey, what are those things?" asks Donatello. "Looks like some sort of robot chefs," says Michelangelo. "Wonder if they can microwave." Continued on 164, Too Many Cooks. And then my sticker is Donatello, says number 5 on it. And the back has got the goopy sticker or gum residue stuff. And it looks like it's a corner piece, so I really have no idea what's going on here other than that I've got a wall and a ceiling.
Nice.
And that is what I got in my pack here as well.
All right, well, I think that wraps up our excellent episode.
Cowabunga.
Sewer Tunnels to Mutants, Brotherhood, and Jesus is a Hunterfield Institute production. You can find us at our Facebook page, Sewer Tunnels to Mutants, Brotherhood, and Jesus. We're also on YouTube at the Hunterfield Institute channel. And you can find us on Spotify, Amazon, and Apple, and other podcasting platforms. So go ahead and comment where you find us, and like, subscribe, rate, review. Especially those 5-star ratings, those are really nice. But any kind of rating or comments, we're welcome to. You can also reach out to us at hunterfieldmanor@gmail.com. Next week, we are going to dive back into the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle Adventure comics. We'll be covering a couple of issues of that. So thank you so much for listening, and we will see you in the sewers. Bye-bye. Bye. Part 33, Crash Course. Tires cried out as the rusted pickup truck slid across the street as it steered hard to the left. Cars trying to cross the intersection screeched to a stop, veered out of the way, and more than one ended up with a bent fender thanks to the wild truck that was not hindered by the colors of the traffic lights. But the driver of the vehicle didn't have the luxury of caring about the chaos he had caused. The officers in the car behind him, on the other hand, were certainly going to add those to the list of crimes he would be arrested for, if they could catch him. Two yellow eyes looked up at the cracked rearview mirror of the truck. The driver growled in annoyance when he saw the flashing red and blue light still on his tail. Looking down the road ahead of him, he saw his destination. It wouldn't be long before he was there, assuming he made it through the rest of the intersections without incident. He had really wanted to lose the cops before that, but now it seemed that it was just going to be another obstacle he would have to worry about once he got to the building. Suddenly, there were loud thuds and bangs, and the truck went a little out of control. The driver looked down at the speedometer and noticed he had lost some speed. It was like he was suddenly carrying a load of... He spotted movement in a side-view mirror, and then he glanced out the back window.
Oh, good,
he said to himself as he rolled his eyes.
Passengers.
There were about 5 figures dressed in black and carrying an array of weaponry. The driver recognized the ninja from when he and his brother tangled with them before, and he wasn't too surprised to see them again. After all, they were the ones who had taken his brother into that building he was aiming for. It was just the sudden appearance in the truck that caught him off guard. The group of ninjas started to move closer to the cab, and so Lou swerved the truck left and right. It stopped the ninjas and even managed to toss one overboard.
Well, 4 is better than 5,
Lou thought. He tried a couple more swerves, but the ninjas were ready for it now and he couldn't shake anymore. Eyeing up his opponents, Lou took inventory of what they were carrying. There was a katana, a pair of kama, a spear, and those wolverine claw things. Pierre told him what they were once, but he couldn't be bothered to remember. Lou hoped the spear wielder was coming first. Instead, the katana led. The back window shattered as the katana came through. Lou managed to jerk to one side so as not to get sliced. When the blade came a second time, Lou practically laid down his head on the passenger seat and twisted the steering wheel hard. This knocked the ninja off balance, and Lou grabbed his arm and bit down hard on it. It only took a handful of seconds before the ninja dropped his sword and recoiled in pain, allowing Lou to sit back up. But that is a long time when driving, especially at the speed the truck was barreling along. Picking up the katana, Lou straightened out the truck and pulled the weapon back as far as he could. He hadn't noticed that the kama wielder was crawling through next, and Lou accidentally knocked him right in the head. He fell backward and dropped his sickle-like weapons conveniently in Lou's lap. Gripping the hilt of the katana hard in his furry hand, Lou plunged the sword hard into the dash, right through an open part of the steering wheel. He hoped that would keep the vehicle's direction for him, so he didn't need to keep steering. Turned out that he had wrapped that up just in time to pull a comma and block the claws slashing down at him through the open driver's side window. Then one of the ninjas thought he could surprise Lou from the side. Lou may not have had the training the ninja thugs had, but his new lupine form had some heightened senses and was also really strong. Plus, he still knew how to use mirrors. Which is why, after holding the Wolverine wannabe at bay for a few moments, Lou then ducked again as a spear came from the opposite window and connected with Mr. Claw, knocking him right off the side of the truck. Looking up from where his head had returned to the passenger seat, he could see the ninja who Lou imagined must look totally shocked underneath that suffocating mask he was wearing. They both looked at one another for a moment, and then Lou unlatched the passenger door and gave it a big push before grabbing hold of the spear. The ninja swung out and collided with a car the truck was flying by. With a crack of wood, part of the spear went along with the ninja and then left Lou with just the right length he needed to lock down the gas pedal. Lou clambered off into the bed of the truck just as 3 more ninja rained down from above. There was another katana, some nunchaku, and a chain with a weight at the end. Lou recalled some martial arts movies he'd watched before and thought that if the ninja wielding that thing knew how to use it, then Lou was in danger. There was a metallic ring as the katana came down and connected with Lou's crossed kama. The wolfman pushed back and caused the ninja to twirl his arms to keep balance. Just then, there was a new ringing sound, but this one was much closer and was accompanied with a sharp pain from one of the nunchaku that knocked Lou right on the side of the head. He growled and lunged forward only to get another strike against his snout. By that time, the katana ninja had regained his footing and was coming in for another slash. Lou deflected it with one kama, while ducking the blow from the nunchaku. He then swung upward, caught the linking piece, and ripped the weapon from the ninja swinging it around. Then he launched himself up into the air and landed on top of the cab of the truck.
It's over, boys. I have the high ground.
When he saw the weighted chain being swung around with amazing skill from the ninja, Lou realized his mistake. He put himself wide open for an assault. As the weighted end came shooting at him, Lou closed his eyes tight and tried to duck, knowing he really didn't have anywhere to go. There was a quick clink, and then a shout of surprise, but no pain. Lou looked up and saw the chain ninja tangled up with a sign from a bus stop, The wolfman smiled in disbelief at his luck. The other two ninjas stood on the bed facing off against Lu. They were all trying to think through the best moves available to them, but it was all cut short when Lu heard the panicked screams of pedestrians. Reflexes kicking in, Lu leapt backward and over the two ninja, twirling in the air and landing on the ground facing the same direction the truck was headed. As his feet hit the ground, he watched the two ninja try and leap off the truck just as it crashed loudly into the building it had been aimed at. Lu was a massive silhouette in the cloud of dust and smoke as he climbed through the hole and stood atop the rubble that had been a wall. His kama were out at a downward angle on either side of him. It was enough to inspire fear in most people, and at least one ninja felt it and fled. Lu thought he could see some uncertainty in a couple of others. Behind the line of ninjas were eight chains from the floor, walls, and ceiling that all reached toward the same focal point. At the center of it was a strange creature with eight limbs, each one clamped in one of those chains. It was Pierre. Lu let out a low growl as he flexed his grip around his kama.
Release my brother!
To be continued.